The start of November brings two of our favorite annual events in Portland, the Portland Book Festival, which we previewed on yesterday's News in Depth with director Amanda Bullock, and the Portland Youth Philharmonic season opening concert, both taking place this Saturday, November 8th. PYP is America's longest-running youth orchestra, dating back to 1924. They'll be launching their 102nd season at Portland's Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall with a concert titled Rising Winds. The program includes two pieces by Australian-born composer Percy Grainger, the Duke of Marlborough Fanfare and Lincolnshire Posy, Mexican composer Gabriela Ortiz's La Calaca, and to top it off, Beethoven's Piano Concerto No. 5, a.k.a. The Emperor. In what's become an annual tradition for me, we're fortunate to have David Hattner, PYP's musical director, to preview the historic 102nd season opener. David, I'd like to start off with a little historical context. I was in Eastern Oregon last week, visiting friends and family in Pendleton and Athena. My wife grew up there, and it got me thinking of PYP, which actually has its roots in that area, though a lot of the people I talked to didn't realize it.
Well, the orchestra is actually, its prehistory goes to Harney County, a little south of there. And Mary Dodge, the violinist who ended up starting the Junior Symphony, was sent to Harney County around 1910 with her then husband, who was a civil engineer. They were trying to work on irrigation for the ranchers. And she started a orchestra made up of local young people with donated instruments. And they even sent it on a little tour to Salem and Portland back then. And she eventually moved back to Portland and taught in the schools. And soon she had enough students to start thinking about having a full orchestra, which they formed with the conductor Jacques Krzyzkowicz starting in the fall of 1924.
And that was originally called the Portland Junior Symphony, which I think retained the name up until the 1970s.
Yes, they kept the Portland Junior Symphony. Of course, back then the Oregon Symphony was called the Portland Symphony. So, and, you know, it played a few concerts a year back then. But yes, the Junior Symphony was the orchestra that became famous not so long after it was founded due to radio broadcasting, which we're engaging in right now. The radio brought the orchestra to literally millions of listeners not so long after it was founded, and people were astonished to learn what was going on in Portland, and also that young people could do this sort of thing.
Hey, I'm still astonished. I've seen a lot of the concerts. It's amazing what they do. So I want to get to Saturday's concert. It's called Rising Winds in the program. I was wondering, is that a play on the coming of winter and maybe showcasing the wind instruments in the orchestra?
Perhaps. The marketing titles for the concerts, I only make suggestions.
They come up with some good ones.
Yes. The musicians are rising musicians, and we are, for the first time in 101 plus seasons, playing a work that's actually scored for band. We've played works for winds before. You've heard several of them for the orchestra winds, you know, just through regular flutes, oboes, clarinets, bassoons, and so forth. But this is actually concert band with euphoniums and saxophones and full percussion. And it's a historical work from the 1930s. And it plays a big role in the history of the concert band. It was really the first time a serious modern composer wrote using modern metrical complexity that Stravinsky had used in The Rite of Spring in a band work. And it was quite baffling to the people who were first assigned to play it. But now colleges and universities and even high schools play it with some regularity.
And that's Percy Grainger's piece, right? Lincolnshire Posy?
That's right, Lincolnshire Posy, a souvenir of folk singers he studied while he was in England. He was Australian, and he spent time in England. He lived in the United States for a long time, but in the early 1900s, he traveled through the Lincolnshire region carrying an Edison phonograph to authentically and permanently capture the folk singers with all of their nuance. Folk songs in classical music had mostly been notated with pencil on paper. Any unusual tones were corrected, or any unusual harmonies were corrected, and they were written, you know, usually in 4-4 or 3-4 or, you know, some normal meter. Even if the singer sang in a very wayward way, it was corrected by the composer. And Grainger did not want to do this. He wanted it to have the real emotional impact of the actual performance by completely untrained musicians who had learned from tradition, these songs. For the most part, they were recorded on Edison cylinders, and then he worked on really ennobling them with fantastic harmonies and orchestration. It's really an extraordinary piece that most people will never have heard in a concert if they're from Portland, because it's just played so rarely in this town, probably never at the Schnitzel Hall.
But I read it has a personal connection for you going back to high school.
Well, playing it, yes, going back to high school, but knowing about it even further back, because when I was in middle school, I played the first piece I'd ever played by Percy Grainger, a very small piece. And the conductor of that told us there was this great big piece called Lincolnshire Posy that was so difficult only college students could play it, and that we should find out more about it. And so when I returned home, I made a request at the radio station. They used to have request night on classical radio. And so they played it, and I taped it, and I listened to it so many times, and it was hard to believe that less than 2 years after that, I was playing it in a band in 10th grade.
You played clarinet.
Played clarinet on it, bass clarinet, various parts. And once I graduated from college, you don't really play much band music anymore after that, unless you're in a military band. So I didn't have a chance to play it. I certainly heard it many times, but it occurred to me that it was one of the pieces I really would like to do. And there was no reason I couldn't find a way to do it with our orchestra winds, some members of our other ensembles, and some guest musicians for some of the parts, like euphonium and some of the saxophone parts. We have a few musicians who are just joining us only for this piece.
Now, speaking of band music, you'll be playing another piece by Grainger, The Duke of Marlborough Fanfare, which leads off the concert. I read that Grainger wrote that in London in 1939, so the eve of World War II, and gave it the subtitle British War Mood Grows. Why did you pick that one to lead off?
Well, the main reason is that the first song setting in Lincolnshire Posy, Libsyn, quotes from the Duke of Marlborough Fanfare. He weaves it in as counterpoint. So, since the audience is going to be hearing everything for the first time, I think, as far as this piece is concerned, except for our friends from the band community, who are some of them are coming to see it, because they have not had a chance to hear Lincolnshire Posy in concert too many times. They'll have a chance to hear this fanfare in its original dressing. Of course, the tune from the Duke of Marlborough Fanfare was collected by a folk song collector, and Grainger took it from her collection. So this setting was written in 1939, but he had known of the Duke of Marlborough song for decades already by then. So that means that this piece actually was written not so long after Lincolnshire Posy. So we'll open with it. It's an interesting fanfare, scored for the brass instruments with a few woodwinds and a suspended cymbal. But it's like everything Grainger wrote, it's exceptionally cleverly set, well written for the instruments, and it'll be a nice sort of refresher for the audience to open the season, and then I'll have a chance to talk to them about the main piece, which is the 17, 18-minute Lincolnshire Posy.
Now, David, you've been a champion of women composers at PYP, and man, I have a list here which doesn't include them all: Ruth Gibbs, Lily Boulanger, Amy Beach, Lara Auerbach, Polina Nazykinskaya, Valerie Coleman, among others. And now this program features Gabriela Ortiz, a contemporary Mexican composer. How did her work come to your attention?
Well, her name came to my attention many times just from looking at what other orchestras are doing around the world. And it seemed like she was writing a lot of really big pieces. Like, I know Dudamel did I think, a nearly an hour-long piece for a giant orchestra and a small vocal ensemble and various other things. And I would hear parts of these pieces, and they're so impressive. Like, her music is just impressive. It's big, it's strong. It's complex and very difficult. So I was looking through for something that originally I was going to pair it with a piece that's now on a separate program this year, Aaron Copland's El Salón, Mexico, which is a souvenir of a visit he made to Mexico City. But I couldn't fit them on the program together for one reason or another. So they're at opposite ends of the season. We're still doing the Copland piece. This year is Copland's 125th anniversary, by the way. So I wanted to have an authentic Mexican piece, and I've already done Carlos Chavez in the past, and Revueltas last year. So I thought we should do somebody living, and she seemed like the most interesting composer that fit on this program. I wanted to have something for the winds, something for the strings, and because the Beethoven that we'll talk about doesn't use every instrument of the modern orchestra. It doesn't have trombones, for instance. So I wanted them to have something really interesting to play, and then to give the strings something to really shine on and prepare them for the season. And this piece, La Kalaka, is doing just that. It is exceptionally difficult and complex, both metrically and technically. So it's very hard for me, as a matter of fact. It has a lot of difficult meter changes, and it's been a challenge. But we played it last night, and I thought it sounded really good. I was impressed. They're extraordinary musicians, the members of our string sections. And I mean, if you want to hear a very impressive composer, like something that's really going to be wow, that's really something, because it starts out rather dissonant and aggressive, and it ends with a folk song that sounds, oh, that sounds more like something somebody would sing at the end. So it and it repeats a lot of times, so it's got a lot of excitement. I think it's great.
And it's very timely. The piece is La Calaca, which Spanish slang calaca is for skeleton or skull. So the work is perfect for the week of Dia de los Muertos, or Day of
Yes,
the Dead, which is celebrated in Mexico the first 2 days of November. So it's very appropriate for this time of year, in addition to all the other reasons you gave us.
that's right. It is all of that is referenced in the score, that it's perfect for this particular Mexican holiday.
Now, the next one I've been excited about since I heard you were going to do it when you revealed the program for the 102nd season. And it's more familiar to classical music lovers, Beethoven's Emperor Concerto, the fifth and final of his piano concertos. Absolutely beautiful piece of music, especially the second movement. I first heard PYP, and you know this, when you featured Beethoven's other fifth, the Fifth Symphony, and still remember how stirring and moving it was. I was hooked. So there are so many ways for a conductor to interpret Beethoven's work. Do you have a certain approach?
I always try to deal with what's there, and not the literary or the historical placement of it. When we did the fifth, I probably told you this. I wanted to make sure that we thought about it and studied it not as musicians who had heard 6, 7, 8, and 9, plus the Rite of Spring, plus all the Brahms symphonies. Like, okay, it's we do know all those, but if we look at it from the standpoint of this is when he wrote it, it was his most contemporary work and doesn't cannot possibly reference things that he had not composed yet. It comes out a little fresher, I think. And so it's the same for this. It's by any standard a giant concerto. It's long. There are longer concertos, but not very many that are significantly longer for any instrument. And it's an unusual concerto even for Beethoven, because there's so much of it that it's sort of like a technical etude for the piano, just scales, arpeggios, and this sort of thing. But yet it's highly ennobled by all the things that he does with these materials. And for whatever reason, everyone's just always loved it, and it got this funny title, Emperor, somewhere along the line, that it can't shake. And so the pieces of Beethoven's that have a name, audiences seem to love those the best. I'm excited about doing it, and the other thing I always do is just follow the lead of our soloist and frame all the things we're going to do around what she's doing.
Right, I want to talk about her. It's Lucy Ju, and she's the winner of the 2025 Portland Piano International Concerto Competition, which is a PYP tradition featuring the competition winner each year. Lucy, I read, joined PYP when she was just 10 years old. Can you talk about her and your experience with Lucy in the orchestra?
Well, she's been in our cello section a little while, and she's been in, quiet presence there. And when I found out she was a soloist finalist for the piano concerto competition, I thought, oh, this is great, because more than once in the past, a member of the orchestra has won the competition. I can't remember the last one who did it. It may go all the way back to the 90th season when Hannah Moon played the Grieg concerto. But we've had a couple. And I heard the competition, and I thought there were many very good players, and I was excited for Lucy when she was declared the winner, and excited for us because we get to play this marvelous Beethoven concerto, which everyone loves to play Beethoven. And but it required some careful programming, because it is an entire half of a concert That does not include the trombones. That does not include most of the percussion section and other things. So we had to program so that those players get something to play on the other half. So all those things happened.
Now, one last question, and this was a surprise to me, but a very happy one. In Willamette Week's recent 2025 Best of Portland Readers poll, PYP was voted best musical group, but you beat out a rock band called Pilot and a bluegrass band called the Bridge City Sinners. It's so well deserved, David, but it must have been something of a surprise to you too.
Well, we're thrilled to be nominated, and we didn't exactly run a Grammy level campaign to get people to vote for us, but we did. We sent the social media around and wrote to people, said, please, like this is an interesting opportunity, and we do feel like the people who know us really appreciate us. The general public maybe has a little less PYP on the brain than 50, 60 years ago because there's so much other music. In Portland now, there's so many big professional organizations and other groups doing so many interesting things. But here we are in our 102nd season, sort of chugging along, doing what we've always done. We feel like we're doing it as well as we ever have done it. And we do it without importing talent, generally speaking. The people are from here. It's an opportunity that's for the children of the people who live and work here. So it's really like of all the things that happen musically, like it is one of the most Portland things, although much of the music is imported. We're just super proud of that, and we're about to settle into a new home for the orchestra. The former Central Lutheran Church on Northeast 21st and Schuyler is now the property of PYP, and we'll be refurbishing it over the next several months and moving into it at some point and doing our rehearsals and some of our performing there. So we're no longer itinerant. It's like, so this is a great time to hear the orchestra and either learn about or be reminded of how much it has inspired people for so many years with the music that it plays, and most importantly, the way that it prepares and performs it.
Right, going back 102 years. Well, David, again, thanks so much for talking with us and previewing Saturday's concert. Wishing you and PYP a very happy 102nd.
Thank you, Ken. Well, enjoy the concert.
We've been talking with David Hattner, musical director of the Portland Youth Philharmonic, now in its 102nd year. The orchestra's season opening concert takes place this Saturday, November 8th, at Portland's Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall, starting at 7:30 p.m. You can find out more online and purchase tickets at portlandyouthphil.org. This is Ken Jones for KBOOS News In Depth.